Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle.
It's time for the bigger picture.
So it's been a week of records in U.S. markets so far. And let's quickly go through what's happened. On Monday, to start off, the Nasdaq Composite clinched a new closing record.
And then yesterday, there were two records set. The Nasdaq Composite gaining 0.7%, finishing at 11,210.8. And the S&P 500, talk about the shortest bear market in history, advancing 0.2%, bringing it to an all-time high by the close.
Yeah, rallied more than 54% from its March low. So pretty much gaining back everything it lost pre-lockdown.
Yep.
Joining us on the line to try and make sense of everything is Han Tan, market analyst at FXTM. Good morning, Han. How are you?
I'm well. Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot for taking the time. Let's try and understand this. S&P 500 hitting its highest level ever, rising 0.2% yesterday's session. Record close 3,389. What is driving this momentum?
Several factors, really. So, for one, you've got this unprecedented amount of support measures, both on the fiscal and monetary side. So that spells more upside for U.S. equities. And, of course, you've got the exuberance on the part of retail traders and the outperformance of the tech sector. Now, so you've got several tailwinds here that have led up to this point. Now, looking forward, if we look at it historically, once it matches or surpasses that previous record high, you typically have about 71% more upside from here. But obviously, that comes with plenty of caveats. You know, we have seen over the last couple of decades where when we get to this kind of point, we could actually be disappointed. So I think the main point here is that there still is enough reasons to be cautious going forward because the global economic outlook still has some downside risks.
Yeah, I keep thinking that. It's just all too good to be true. The dollar has been driven lower over the past couple of months. What's the reason behind this weakening of the U.S. currency? And then we have to ask, how would this affect currencies here in Asia, the Sing dollar, for example?
Sure. So let's start with the greenback. I think the reason for that is because investors' fears or their expectations around faster inflation in the U.S., I think that's the concern that it's going to erode the dollar's purchasing power, hence the decline in the U.S. dollar. So I think right now the dollar index is headed towards that 92 psychological level. It could go down to 90, so perhaps more weakness over the coming months. And that's the market bias right now, really, that we will see the dollar moderating further. And, of course, we've got the Fed meeting minutes due out early tomorrow morning, our time. And also, look, if there's a surprise there that really changes how markets view the U.S. inflation path, then we could see the dollar react accordingly. Now, for the other question, you know, how would this affect Asian currencies? Well, of course, if you look at the Singapore dollar, obviously taking advantage of that weaker greenback, now back to pre-pandemic levels, strongest since February. But Asian currencies as a whole, though, they haven't been able to take advantage of the weaker dollar as much compared to their G10 counterparts. So the idea is that because, you know, Asian economies are less tolerant of stronger currencies with hopes of trying to keep their exports competitive. I think, Manisha, early on in the program, you mentioned Japan's steep drop in their exports, right? So that's the rationale, to try and keep their currencies more competitive to boost their exports. So with all that said, you know, I think the upside for Asian currencies could be limited until the global economy, you know, is on a steadier footing in this post-pandemic recovery.
Quite timely to talk about currencies because you've got the pound as well. It's been restored to pre-pandemic levels against the US dollar. But what's interesting is you have sort of Brexit talks continuing this week. The UK and EU holding their sixth round of trade talks, trying to sort some kind of a deal out. With these downside risks at play, Han, how is the pound holding up? What are you expecting?
Yeah, so look, the pound is also back to pre-pandemic levels, being able to take advantage of that weaker dollar. And from a technical perspective, we could see more gains over the coming days. We have seen the formation of another golden cross. But Elliot, you're right to bring up some of these key risks, because at this point in time, we still cannot rule out a no-deal Brexit happening right at the start of next year. So that's weighing on sterling. But I think the more pressing matter over the coming months is for policymakers to ensure that the UK economy can really put the worst of the pandemic behind it, right? You know, because there are concerns that these early signs of their recovery, you know, that could all come undone in the fourth quarter as the UK government unwinds its unemployment benefits program. So if that results in soaring unemployment in October, you know, and then coupled with a hard Brexit just a few months later, I think that could spell the worst case scenario for the pound, you know, and we'll definitely sharpen our outlook from next quarter onwards.
Well, yeah. With all of these talks and uncertainty, it's hardly a surprise that gold has rebounded back above $2,000 an ounce amid also the escalating US-China tensions that just don't go away. Is it going to continue upwards, do you think? How high? How long?
Yeah, so long story short, I expect more upside. I'm looking at the mid 2000s, so between 2300 to 2500 when all is said and done. Or as long as markets expect U.S. inflation to break above the Fed's 2% target, or at least for the Fed to tolerate higher inflation, that should keep U.S. real yields in negative territory. And of course, overall, we do find ourselves in a very supportive environment for gold. Although U.S. inflation, that's the primary driver, at least the narrative surrounding it, you've also got that weaker dollar that's also paving the upside for gold, like we have seen over the last 48 hours or so, 24, 48 hours. But also keep in mind, you know, like you mentioned, I think the simmering U.S.-China tensions, that's something to keep an eye on. And of course, the global economic outlook, right? That still has some downside risks to it. We are just not quite out of the woods just yet. So all that should spell a very conducive environment for bullion, and especially now that the healthy correction that we saw earlier this month, that's done and over with.
Yeah, and it was interesting to spot that at an event overnight, President Trump said he's not talking to China. It felt like the kind of thing you might say in the playground. With all of that going on, is that something we're going to have to watch for, you know, these possible phase one talks getting back online? Is that what we're looking for? Is that a good benchmark?
Yeah, well, that's certainly a key event risk to look out for, because keep in mind, although, like, say, the U.S. tech shares have really powered the rally in U.S. equities, I think what's weighing on the mind of investors is that, you know, how these U.S.-China tensions could potentially erode some of these big tech companies that have a presence in China, Apple, for example, right? So if these tech counters are hobbled in terms of trying to push these benchmark indices higher, then I think that could send some cautionary signals into the markets. And like you said, it's certainly a key event risk to look out for.
We've been speaking with Han Tan, market analyst at FXTM. Han, thanks for your time this morning. Take care and stay safe.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.